Support for WABE comes from 100 Miles, a nonprofit committed to preserving Georgia's 100-mile coast. Protecting this critical coastal ecosystem takes all of us. Watch the stories of the innovators and future leaders who help keep our coast flowing at ourgeorgiacoast.org.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
For Thursday, October 21st, 2021, it's The Brief from WABE. I'm Emil Moffitt. Georgia's 2021 high school graduation rate held steady at about 83%, according to state officials. Martha Dalton reports on how Metro Atlanta districts did.
Atlanta Public Schools reached an all-time high graduation rate of 83.1%. Superintendent Lisa Herring was very proud.
Despite a global pandemic, uncertainty, and racial unrest, these resilient scholars persevered and accomplished an important milestone.
APS improved its rate by almost 3 percentage points. Fulton also ticked up and had the highest rate among large metro districts at 87.7%. DeKalb and Clayton's rates were about the same as last year at 75 and 76% respectively. Cobb and Gwinnett ticked down slightly. In Gwinnett, 82.5% of seniors graduated on time. Cobb still beat the state graduation rate at just over 87%. Martha Dalton, WABE News.
An investigation has found a math professor at Georgia State University posted neo-Nazi and racist propaganda on several social media platforms. A new report from the Southern Poverty Law Center uncovered the posts from Larry Cody, who teaches at GSU's Perimeter College. According to the SPLC, Cody shared the extremist content on the Russian social media site VK and a handful of extremist websites. Rachel Janik, an editor for the SPLC, joined WABE's Closer Look on Thursday.
It was a former student who was going to friend him on Facebook and noticed, I believe, in the like section, extremist books, and recognized them and was really alarmed and let us know. So our reporter, Jeff Tischhauser, started digging more into it and found there was a lot more than just those likes.
GSU did not respond to WABE's request for comment. The president of Atlanta's NAACP chapter, Richard Rose, has put out a statement condemning mayoral candidate Kasim Reed. The former Atlanta mayor says the attack is a ploy by dark money interests. Christopher Alston has more.
Rose says he felt the need to speak out as part of the typically nonpartisan organization's mission to move Atlanta forward. In the letter, Rose says while in office, Reed failed to make progress on affordable housing, police reform, and removing Confederate monuments. Rose also criticized Reed for his endorsement by the city's police union, saying it has never acknowledged police misconduct and does not include most black officers. In a statement, Reed's campaign says he is honored to have the endorsement of the International Brotherhood of Police Officers, Local 623, and that he is a lifetime member of the NAACP. His campaign says they have reached out to the organization's national leadership to advise on the situation. Christopher Alston, WABE News.
Grady Memorial Hospital in Atlanta has set up a table where people with questions about COVID-19 vaccination can share their concerns with medical professionals. Dr. Kimberly Manning, an internist at Grady, has had lots of conversation with folks considering vaccination in recent weeks. On today's Did You Wash Your Hands, our podcast about the coronavirus, she talks with WABE health reporter Sam Whitehead about one recent conversation that stayed with her.
A young woman that I was talking to one day, she'd read something or heard something that there could potentially be an impact on an unborn son leading to infertility in her future male children. What we try to do is take a step back and really try to humanize the individual. I'm a mother. I have two sons. And if there was anything that I could have imagined threatening the future of those children, I don't know. I think I would have been really nervous. So we affirm what people think. I say, you know, I'm a mom too. And I can definitely see how that would be scary. And like, you've thought about this a lot. May I share with you a little bit more factual information that might help you think about this a little bit differently? And then we have a conversation and we focus in on that rather than a playbook, right? A one size fits all. We ask your why and we address your why, but we affirm it because if you really believe that, and depending upon your lived experiences, you know, if you live in an over-policed area and you have seen the worst of what the world can do, you know, you may be in a position where it is plausible for you to believe somebody does not have your best interest in mind.
Have you seen maybe any kind of trends about, you know, the kind of individual who is looking to have this kind of conversation?
I'll say that some of the trends are just that people have been shut down. We've had to have tissue at the table because just about every time I've been there, somebody has begun to cry because they felt seen and they felt heard. So I would say the biggest thing is that people have been shamed and made to feel stupid about the way that they feel when, you know, again, if you imagine, you know, the context of where people are coming from and why they might think that a bigger, you know, organization doesn't have their best interest at heart. I mean, gosh, that's something to really think about and reflect on. So I think the feeling of shame and lifting off that blanket of shame has probably been one of the most impactful and powerful things that we've seen repetitively.
This approach that you're taking is very individualistic, and it says you as a person have lived this experience that informs your perception of this issue. Let's talk about that. It does seem like public health doesn't always have the space, the resources to do that kind of one-on-one outreach. Is there any place for maybe external pressure in these kinds of conversations, you know, really pushing people to get vaccinated?
I mean, there has to be, you know. I mean, I'm not such an optimist that I'm not also pragmatic, right? But I think if we could just respect our patients enough to have those conversations with them too, I think it's reasonable, right? So for example, I was sitting at the table. There was somebody who was employed by a place that had placed a vaccine mandate. And they came to the table to really sort of express their disdain about that to me. And about how, you know, they probably to feed their family would have to get vaccinated, but really didn't want to get vaccinated and wanted to talk to me about that. And so they asked how I felt about it. And I said, well, you know, I work at a level one trauma center and the place where people go who have no ability to pay. And our hospital on and off has been on diversion for months. And it is primarily because we do not have beds secondary to patients being in the hospital with COVID, the vast majority of whom are unvaccinated. So an individual decision is bigger than just one person. And as I told this gentleman that I was talking to in a lobby that day, I said, you know, we are all support beams. You know, we're support beams on a structure. And if I pull the support beam out, the whole thing collapses. And we just have got to help people see themselves that way. And that resonated with him. You're a support beam, every single one of us. And we don't know which one of us is the one beam that's going to cause everything to collapse. It might be you.
Dr. Kimberly Manning is an internist at Grady Memorial Hospital in Atlanta. You can find more of her conversation with our health reporter, Sam Whitehead, in his latest podcast of Did You Wash Your Hands? Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Atlanta Fire Rescue will soon be riding up to large crowded events on new e-bikes and hope to more quickly and easily get to those in emergency situations. Fire Rescue officials say the Southern California-based bike manufacturer Aventon donated a fleet of e-bikes. They'll help provide regular support for firefighters and EMTs stationed at Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport and at some of the metro's largest events like the Peachtree Road Race and Music Midtown. The e-bikes can travel 40 miles in a single charge and speeds of up to 28 miles an hour. The Atlanta Braves are one victory away from advancing to the World Series for the first time in more than two decades. The Braves took a 3-1 lead in the National League Championship Series Wednesday night with a 9-2 win over the Los Angeles Dodgers. First baseman Freddie Freeman says the Braves are playing their best baseball of the year.
Things have been just going really well as a team standpoint, and it's just hard to not look at it and say that this is a good team. So it's been fun to be a part of. I feel like we're a pretty complete team.
Game 5 is Thursday night at Dodger Stadium. And finally, the Atlanta Hawks are beginning their new season by dedicating a new mural in East Atlanta. Local artist Mohamed Youngay was commissioned for the work.
It's very colorful. It's abstract, the same way Atlanta is. It's always flowing, always moving, always busy.
The mural starts with a miniature basketball court on the ground and then extends up the front of a building on Flat Shoals Avenue. The mural also features a basketball hoop with an image of the Atlanta skyline serving as the backboard.
Only thing about it is trying to see if people are going to actually try and dunk on this hoop that's here in the neighborhood. We do want to discourage that. This is not a live basketball room.
The Hawks open their season against the Dallas Mavericks on Thursday. That's it for The Brief. You can find more local news at our website, wabe.org. Lily Oppenheimer produced today's program. Our editor is Kathleen Quillian. In for Jim Burris, I'm Emil Moffitt. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now plugged in, a WABE Politics podcast. New name, same on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE Politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we talk to politicians and voters to break down each week's biggest headlines. New episodes drop on Fridays. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.
WABE.